My reason for inviting us to spend a brief time on this text is to be reminded that it isn't just the Christian tradition with its emphasis on obedience to the will of God that causes the notion of virtue and vice to be constricted down from Aristotle's rather broader sense of virtue as a midpoint into the idea of a specific virtue having one corresponding vice. This is already perceptible within what might call the later Aristotelian tradition. The followers of Aristotle seem to have found his doctrine a little bit unwieldy, and one finds a simplification of it into what one will then find in the monastic authors and very often in the Christian authors, the contrast between what you might call a way of light and a way of darkness, a sense of the goodness that is virtue and of the evil that is vice. This is already perceptible in a pseudo-Aristotelian document, which was for a very long time attributed to Aristotle, but is now believed to be the work of Stoics or Peripatetics followers of Aristotle, perhaps as late as the first century AD. Perhaps this document comes into existence around the time that the Lord is preaching the gospel, although that's very uncertain. It might have been earlier than that. And it is certainly from a Greek philosophical context, from a part of the world that didn't have contact with Judaism, or certainly not with developing Christianity. And it's a reminder of the movement away from this broader, more complex understanding of virtue and vice into something understood specifically, but unfortunately a little more narrowly. The particular interest we might have in this document is that it is the literary precursor of chapter 89 of Evagrius Practicos. When we look at that, you'll recognize terms that are taken literally from this document. Dropping down to section 1.3, in the same way that we saw with Plato in the description of taken from Republic and from Phaedrus, the soul is tripartite, and indeed Plato himself is mentioned. And so there is a desire to understand and to describe the virtues as belonging to the different parts of the soul. This was not a primary concern of Aristotle. Aristotle was much more concerned to locate virtue as a midpoint between vices on the one hand of excess and the other of deficiency. He was not so much concerned to find them in association with a particular spot within the soul, but this is going back to the Platonic model, and this becomes the kind of approach that will be much more common within the Christian understanding of virtues, and in particular, the monastic understanding. The soul is tripartite, and the reasoning part, the logisticon, as we've seen, has prudence or wisdom, although prudence is probably a better translation of phronesis. Of the irascible part, or the part that is capable of strength and courage, the virtues are indeed gentleness and courage. The desiring part has the virtues of temperance and self-control. And here, rather than just justice belonging to the whole of the soul, here there is justice and liberality and magnanimity, a megalopsuchia, greatness of soul. If you spend any time looking at Aristotle's specific definitions in the latter portion of Book 2 of the Nicomachean Ethics, you will have seen these terms being used. So this is an attempt, you might say, to bring together Plato and Aristotle, to use Plato's model of the soul and use the virtues that were defined and described by Aristotle, but not necessarily, and in fact not, keeping them so much as midpoints as instead opposing things, the virtue which is the good one strives for and the vice being the thing that one avoids. The vices are literally the opposites of each of those virtues. And I've tried to color code this document again with the virtues being brown and red and the vices in general being dark blue. If you drop down, you'll see that there is an attempt to describe each of these virtues. And again, we're going to see this in Cassian and Evagrius. First, you locate them in the different parts of the soul. Then you define them very briefly, definitions of prudence, of gentleness, of courage, and temperance, and so forth. You describe and define the virtues, and then you do the same for the vices, dropping down to the blue bar, characteristics of the vices. Here you have exactly the same things listed and described in more detail. Then you not only describe definitions, but you also describe the traits that accompany them. That is to say, you look at the way the virtues branch out into other things or become other things. What are they associated with? We'll see this in Cashin in particular when he defines the eight deadly temptations or eight deadly sins, borrowing these from Evagrius. He goes on to describe, if you will, the consequences, the later dark evolution of each of these sins. And he's borrowing on or following a pattern, a tradition that was established and clearly attested here in this document. So beginning at the red bar, definitions and traits that accompany the virtues, we can see that prudence then has to do with taking counsel, judging, behaving rightly, observing due occasion, employing speech and action with sagacity, with wisdom, having expert knowledge of the things that are useful. And it corresponds to or is associated with memory and experience and acuteness are consequences or concomitants of prudence. In the same way, gentleness has as its characteristics, specifically tranquility and stability. Courage has as its accompaniments confidence, bravery, daring, and persevering and endurance. So this sets up a pattern of a definition, then a description of the things that follow from the later evolution of these particular characteristics. Dropping down, we'll see definitions and traits that accompany the vices, just as one had associated positive factors associated with the virtues. One can see here that the vices degenerate into other things as well. Imprudence is associated or accompanied by unskillfulness, ignorance, self-indulgence, awkwardness, forgetfulness. And he describes irritability. There is a kind of a disturbance of one's capacity for behaving in an energetic way against evil, which in a vice form can become irritability, that corresponds to irascibility or bitterness or sullenness. This is accompanied by, or one might say it degenerates into, excitability, instability, bitter speech, taking offense. And one can see that just as Aristotle enumerated the virtues and the vices in the idea of this midpoint of virtue and vices of extreme excess and of absence or of deficiency, here there is a desire to specifically define the corresponding and contrasting characteristics of the virtue that is the good one strives for and the vice which is its opposite. So this is an adaptation, one might say a taking away of some of the breadth or the depth of Aristotle's vision, creating a somewhat simpler but still complex model of virtue and vice, which tends to be a little more rigid, which doesn't tend to acknowledge or easily see the fact that for every virtue, it's not just a question of one opposing vice. It's not just a question of going wrong in one direction. It's possible also to go wrong in the other direction, even if it's not as common or as often seen for human beings. Aristotle had that beautiful insight, which tends to fade a bit, has already faded in this document created by his successors a centuries later, and it is this kind of a model that tends to predominate in Christian discussions of virtue and vices up until the discovery, the rediscovery of Aristotle and his reincorporation in Christian understandings of these things, particularly by St. Thomas Aquinas, which, as I said, I wish we had opportunity to go into in detail, but we will not be able to look at in detail in this course.